The Lord slays the king of demons. Text number 43. Shri Rishaya Uchuhu. Shri Rishaya Uchuhu. Tvam nastapa parama matha yadatma tejo. Yenedamadi purushatma gatam sasartha. Tadvipralaptamamanadya sharanyapala. Raksha grihita vapusha punaranvamam sthaha. Translation: all the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O supreme maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, O original personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon. But now, by yourself appearing in the form of Narsimhadev, which is meant just to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. Swami Srila Prabhupada. The living entities wandering within the jurisdiction of the 8,400,000 species of life get the opportunity for self-realization in the human form and gradually in such other elevated forms as those of the demigods, kinnaras, and charanas, as will be described below. In the higher statuses of life, beginning from human life, the main duty is tapasya or austerity. As Rishabhdev advised his sons, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhet. To rectify our material existence, austerity or tapasya is absolutely necessary. However, when people in general come under the control of a demon or a demoniac ruling power, they forget this process of tapasya and gradually also become demoniac. All the saintly persons who were generally engaged in austerity felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord in the form of Narsimhadev. They realized that the original instruction concerning human life that is meant for tapasya, for self-realization, was reaffirmed by the Lord when he killed Hiranyakashipu. All the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O supreme maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, O original personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon. But now, by yourself appearing in the form of Narsimhadev, which is meant to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaurade Pushpavanto Chitro Shando Tamunodo Ugrupya Nukraye Vayam Subhaktana Andrike Shri Keshri Vasubhutana Nisha Magravikramaha. So everyone is taking the opportunity to glorify the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord, when he appeared in the form of Narsimhadev, And yesterday, His Grace Dwarkadish Prabhu mentioned this point, that the Lord likes to be glorified. That is one of His qualities, especially when His devotees glorify Him, it is very pleasing to Him. Therefore, He is called as Uttama Shloka. Also, the corollary to this is that devotees like to glorify the Lord. This is their natural quality. The only activity of a devotee is Machita Madgata Prana Bodhayanta Parasparam Kathayantascha Mam Nityam Tushyanti Cha Ramanti Cha. Two activities are very important, especially in the human form of life. In this verse, from this verse we can take these two points. One is Tushyanti Cha. One likes to be nourished. Nobody likes to be sick or undernourished. And the other is Ramanti Cha. One likes to be happy. No one wants to be sad. So, in this natural pursuit, people in the human form of life try so many ways to nourish themselves and to be happy. In the modern era, the trend is there are so many things that one tries to add in one's diet, or one tries to take so many pills in between diets, or maybe even as an option to diet, hoping that one can be fully nourished. And there are so many means that one tries to be happy. However, the natural quality of devotees is their nourishment and their enjoyment is in discussing and glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All discussion amongst devotees is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And how is that possible? How is it possible that one can glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Machitta, madgata, prana. When one's consciousness is engaged in always thinking about the Supreme Lord, or rather, literally it would mean one's consciousness is always in the Lord. Madgata pran. When one makes the goal of one's life the Supreme Lord, then it is very natural to discuss about the Supreme Lord with one another. Otherwise, words may come out, but the discussion will not lead to glorification. And hence, in such a society or in such a conglomeration of human beings, it is simply some jai ghoshana, that's all. Presently in Maharashtra, this festival is going on where they're trying to glorify a very dedicated servant of Krishna. An entire one day or 5 days or 10 days, it will appear as if there is discussion going about him, but the whole discussion is just jai ghoshana of how, what is that? Tumse badkar kaun, tumhare bhakt gano mein humse badkar kaun. So that is the that is the entire discussion that will be going on, that how you are the greatest, and especially if you are too embarrassed that we are discussing about you, so we'll discuss about ourselves. How we are so glorious. Humse badkar kaun? Who is greater than us? So, amongst the association of devotees, where the goal of life, prana, is to glorify Krishna, then such devotees find their pleasure and their nourishment in such an environment. They are called Hansa, Hansanam, Paramhansas. So here, the rishis are also taking, again, another point that can be understood is, that according to one's capacity and according to one's individual inclination, there are various ways one can glorify the Lord. Like here, the rishis, according to their inclination, are going to glorify. Indradev, previously, according to his capacity and inclination, glorified. In the future, the Kinnaras, the Pitris, and others will also glorify. According to their understanding, their realization of how the Lord has benedicted them in so many ways. So every devotee has a capacity to glorify the Lord according to one's realization of how one has been benedicted. And the Lord's benediction always is there in so many ways. So, here the rishis are glorifying the Lord for preserving the process of austerity and penance. And this is because they like austerity and penance. Indradev, he likes to receive so many oblations in sacrifice. When it was stopped, he became a little concerned. And therefore his prayer was, "My dear Lord, you have re-established that by coming. Hiranyakashipu had stolen everything from us. Now you have given it back to us." The rishis were not troubled by this stopping of sacrifices because they are least concerned. Unless and until it is being offered unto the Supreme Personality of God, they are least concerned whether it comes to them. But their concern is, if they cannot use the human form of life, the opportunity to practice penance and austerity. And therefore they pray unto the Lord, unto Lord Narsingadev. This was almost stopped. In case of the demigods, it was stopped. But the rishis and the siddhas here, it appears that in their case, it was almost stopped. Therefore, the siddha lokas and the mahar lokas are the higher planetary systems, even higher than the swarga lokas. The Swargaloka is the planet where one gets the best of material enjoyment in terms of external resources. But the higher planets of Tapolok, Maharlok, Janalok, there the resources are within. They are internal resources that one uses for satisfaction. External resources are completely curtailed. There is complete pratyahar. It is totally given up. So this Hiranyakashipu was qualified enough to stop misutilization of external resources in the sense that it should be used only for him. But the internal consciousness he could not stop. However, the rishis and the siddhas, they saw that unless and until they also assumed a position where they gave up austerity and penance for the Supreme Lord and did it for Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was so cruel that he would unnecessarily trouble the rest of the universe. Unnecessarily. So hence, the process was almost stopped. And they also are stating that this process of austerity began with the Lord himself. The Lord invested, and how did it begin with the Lord himself? At the beginning of creation. The beginning of creation began with the process of austerity. Before that, there was the mercy of the Lord by which Brahmaji was born. According to his previous karma, Brahmaji was born from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and now there has to be creation. However, for creation to take place, he has to be invested with the potency of the Lord, the creative potency. And the creative potency of the Lord was only accessed. It was like a file within the Lord's hard drive, and it had to be accessed by the password tapa, the 16th and the 21st word of the syllables, tapa. So, they are saying that this process was instituted by you because your incarnation in the form of this avatar, Brahmaji, in whom you invested the creative potency, and is also the guna avatar, in that incarnation, through the process of austerity, you established creation. And thus, this process was instituted by you yourself. But sakaleneha mahata yogo nashta. Everything in this material world deteriorates. So for a time being, it appeared that by the influence of Hiranyakashipu, this was also lost. Narsingdev comes and re-establishes it. Dharma samsthapanarthaya. He comes and establishes the dharma of austerity and penance. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada stresses this point that out of the 8,400,000 species of life, there are only 4 lakh species, or 400,000 species of human beings. And they are the categories of human beings and higher statuses like demigods, kinnaras, charanas, everyone. And he says the human form of life, the main duty is tapasya. And often, Prabhupada has quoted this verse, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhed. This is where Prabhupada would generally stop. Either he would say, tapo divyam putraka, and then he would stop. It was as if Prabhupada was saying to all of us, you know, we are his children. And he's saying, tapo divyam putraka. Oh, my dear children, engage in tapasya, but divya. That aspect should not be lost. Like in the beginning years of a Krishna consciousness, some of us, me included, we were trying to do tapasya. What was tapasya? Fasting. When? Ekadashi. Why? Too much weight. So we thought this is good combination. There's tapasya and there's health. So it's good. But there has to be divya tapasya. And divya tapasya has a specific definition, which may not exactly correspond with our idea of tapasya. So what is that divya tapasya? Yena sattvam shuddhet. And again, Prabhupada would generally stop here. Because this itself is like a bij mantra. You know, whenever there are mantras, a bij has to be chanted before. Generally it is Om, that is a bija. It fructifies the mantra. Otherwise, the mantra will not fructify. So, this is like tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhet. It is like the sum total of nayam dehade bhajam niriloke kashtam kaman arhate vit bhujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhet. So, divya tapasya is meant for sattva shuddhi. That is all. So, clear-cut understanding is there. So, today, I just went through some of the lectures of Srila Prabhupada and some of his purports and tried to find out what Prabhupada has said about tapasya and atapasvi. So, as time permits, this will be covered in 3 parts. First is, we'll try to get some of the definitions from Srila Prabhupada's lectures and his purports on tapasya. And one who practices tapasya is a tapasvi. Also in his purports, you find out who is not a tapasvi. So that will be the second part. And the third part is, Prabhupada gives something very unique, which is a unique quality of a tapasvi. That will be the concluding part. That what is this unique quality of a tapasvi? All right. So, in one of his lectures, where Srila Prabhupada is elaborating on the qualities that Krishna mentions about his universal form. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is mentioning Arjuna, he incites Krishna in one way, or he encourages Krishna, or let us say he requests Krishna in an encouraging tone. My dear Lord, please tell me in vistarena, in great detail about your quality. So the Lord is encouraged. Oh, this devotee wants to know in great detail without time limitation. So let me do it. So then he goes on in great detail and finally concludes that this is just a sample of what are my real qualities. So one of the qualities that he says is tapas chasmi tapasvishu. Of those who perform austerities, I am austerity personified. And Srila Prabhupada, he is giving this lecture and he says, so tapasvi, that is very important. He says, tapasvi means those who are seeking after eternal happiness. And he quotes this verse, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam. Tapo divyam, he says. So tapasvis are those who are seeking after eternal happiness. So who are the people who are seeking eternal happiness? Prabhupada says, the karma yogis, the jnani yogis, the ashtanga yogis, all of them are in the process of, even in one of his purports, Prabhupada says, even the nihilists, at least they have a concept that eternal happiness is beyond materialism. So even they can be accepted as the nihilists, and the impersonalists can be accepted as people who are searching for eternal happiness. So these are the various categories. Right from the misinformed on the transcendental platform to those who have proper information. And they are on the ladder. The karma yogis, the jnana yogis, ashtang yogis, and the bhaktas or the bhakta yogis. Which also is categorized. Topmost of which are those who have taken sharanagati. Sarva dharman parityajya. So, of these, the real tapasvi is one who is engaged in transcendental tapasya or austerities. And what is transcendental austerities? Transcendental austerities means realizing Krishna. So that is the real yogi. And Prabhupada says, there have been many other examples also of people who have performed austerities like Hiranyakashipu. He also wanted eternal happiness. Didn't Hiranyakashipu want eternal happiness? Yeah, he also wanted eternal happiness because he wanted immortality and he knew that is the only way I can be happy. And he did severe tapasya on the Mandara mountains. Prabhupada concludes Hiranyakashipu's episode by saying, however, the goal of his tapasya was material gain. So this tapasya is not tapasya because it does not fall in the category of eternal happiness. It appears that he wants eternal happiness, but his concept of eternal happiness is material gain. It's not eternal happiness. So again, this word divya is something very mystical, something which is guhya. So then Prabhupada comes to giving some basic definition of a tapasya. He says, tapasya means accepting or undergoing voluntary inconveniences of this body. That is tapasya. Generally, a person does not want to undergo inconvenience for this body. Like if we want to sit in a particular position, we'll try to sit in a position that is comfortable. We do not want discomfort. So, voluntary inconvenience for the body is called tapasya. Generally, because we are accustomed to enjoying sense pleasures, tapasya means ideally giving up the idea of sense gratification. So, this is the beach. This is the origin of tapasya. The origin of tapasya is the desire or an idea, a concept that I want to give up sense gratification. Then one tries to build up on that idea or concept. One tries to go further on that idea or on concept. So just like Prabhupada says, Ekadashi, we fast. Why? Why have we accepted this tapasya? Because we have been told regulative principles. Some of the regulative principles are like the four regulative principles we follow. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. And we follow some regulative principles like observing fasts on days like Ekadashi. So that is tapasya. Why? Because the body undergoes some inconvenience. It does not get its daily quota of nutrition that we like, the body likes. So why this is done? Because our existence is impure. We are contaminated.
What is the contamination? The contamination is birth, death, old age and disease. So by following tapasya, we counteract this contamination. So, it appears that tapasya could be a little suffering because there is bodily inconvenience. But Prabhupada says, because of contaminated state, already there is suffering. There is already birth, death, old age and disease. This suffering is already there. So when we counteract this with tapasya, although it appears to be suffering, it's not actually suffering. It's the cure for suffering. And he says, just like a person may have fever, or he may be in a disease condition. So he's suffering. Material body undergoes suffering. And a person would want to have happiness from this suffering. So what does he do? He's told to have a particular diet. He's told to take medicines. That is tapasya. You cannot simply imagine, oh, without tapasya, I will get all right. I will not follow any regimen and I will get all right. Why? Because it is too problematic. I cannot follow this regimen. So this sort of imagination or this sort of understanding will not be helpful. The only benefit one will get is that one will take things cheaply, one will become a sahajiya. So therefore Krishna says, where will you get that strength for tapasya? That is divya. So when a devotee engages or when a transcendentalist engages in tapasya for eternal happiness, for something transcendental, then that divya aspect, that tapo divyam, that aspect, divya aspect is Krishna. He gives the strength to perform tapasya. So although if we are engaged in tapasya, which appears to be divya tapasya, but there is no connection with divya or Krishna, the idea or the concept of getting free from material disease is not there, then only the routine is done, but the disease is not being cured. The disease still remains. In another lecture, Srila Prabhupada is speaking about how these scientists are not able to understand the Krishna consciousness movement. They say the Krishna consciousness movement begins with that right at birth, one is in a problem. Janma itself is because of my impure consciousness. Birth itself is because of my impure desires. Dehi no smin yatha. And Prabhupada says, this is where the Krishna consciousness movement begins, at birth itself. At how? At birth itself, consciousness is impure. Whereas the scientists and advanced technologists, they have no idea of what is birth. Therefore, they are so confused by the Krishna consciousness movement that what is all this? Where does the Krishna consciousness movement begin? What is its basis? So Prabhupada says, the basis is that right at birth, we are contaminated. And therefore, human form of life, especially right from birth, there have to be this sanskaras, this purification. There has to be this tapasya going on. That the child should do this, the child should be engaged in this way, the child should get this education, should be trained in such a particular way, oriented. His orientation is in a particular way. So that the idea for tapasya is encouraged within a living entity when one takes the human form of life. And Prabhupada again says, just like cough or cold, you take treatment. Similarly, the disease in the human form of life is birth. That is a disease. And to get free from birth is the only way to be free from this disease. And how does one do that? One uses the human form of life for practicing divya tapasya. So you may say, the scientists may say so many things according to their imagination. They may extrapolate in so many ways. However, Shastra says this human form of life is for tapasya. The scientists every day, the magazines, the scientific journals, including the tabloids today, they bring out so many ways. Now we have discovered that unless and until you add vitamin B12 to your diet, you won't be nourished. This is the problem. Therefore, we have patented a particular form of diet that if one takes this regimen, according to the World Health Organization, human form of life, the human beings will be better situated
for being satisfied. So there is one patent. Then the next day they come out, oh, for patients who have stress, this is very good. The next day they say, smoking is at all not related to all these things. The next day they come out, this called cause cancer. Mobile frequencies can cause cancer. The next day they come out with another thing. No, actually it is not very much related. So all this, and we get so much caught up in all this because it is so informative. But Prabhupada says, it is simply imagination. They don't understand the real disease. You know, supposing a person is diseased, having cough and cold, and you say, actually, if you have malaria, you should take this disease. But then we found out there's no relation of this, we should take this medicine. But then we have found out that this medicine has become now redundant. So therefore, for jaundice, you should take that medicine. And actually, you know, if your house is not built with the proper cement, you should have this cement. Now, I am suffering from cough and cold. Why don't we address this problem? It's a simple problem. If you can address this, it's so I become free from that. So similarly, the disease in the human form of life is janma or impure consciousness. And to free, become free from the cycle of birth and death requires tapasya. So the Prabhupada says the whole Vedic process for that is meant for that purpose. To purify the existence of the living being so that he can be saved from the reputation of birth, death, old age and disease. In another place, Prabhupada gives a succinct definition of a tapasvi or one who is practicing tapasya. Tapasvi refers to a living entity who tries to gain strength to deliver himself from the danger of being afflicted by the threefold miseries. This is another idea. Every moment, material nature is going to present obstacles. In one of his lectures, Radhanath Swami Maharaj was mentioning that supposing you declare a war on someone, and then he just switched back and he took another example. He said, supposing there is a prisoner in a jail. As long as the prisoner is following everything that is told in the jail, hardly anyone notices him. Maybe the constable on duty says, so you're all right, in the night don't trouble me, I'm going to sleep, you also go off to sleep. So everything is going on well. But then at night, if the prisoner breaks and tries to run away, what happens? Not one, not two, not three policemen, but the whole jail machinery gets after him. He's escaping. So although he's in the jail, at the most he attracts the attention of one or two people. But when one wants to get out of the jail, the whole prison machinery is on alert. This person is trying to get out. Generally a jail, it is not that the jail superintendents are against the prisoners. Their business is that they get reformed. However, if the prisoner is breaking away and they do not know whether it is reformed, then they go after him to see whether he is reformed or not. So similarly, when the living entity tries to undergo tapasya, the whole machinery of Maya is awakened. And moment after moment, there is going to be obstacles. And whenever there is obstacles, you need strength. You know, if there is a hurdle race, every hurdle you need renewed strength, because after the first hurdle, some of your energy is gone. And you cannot stop and say, okay, break please. You know, you cannot have an ad break in between. Like that. And then the athlete, he becomes a little, and gets some energy, and then comes to the second hurdle and jumps. No. Every hurdle after that requires more energy, more determination. And the athlete requires strength at every next hurdle. Renewed strength. That I have to complete this. Just another hurdle to go, another hurdle to go, another hurdle to go. I have to complete this. So there is priming right from the beginning, but that priming is not just enough. You need to go on and on and on every hurdle. If it's a big hurdle race, 400 meter hurdle race, then it becomes a little difficult. Then if there is all those heptathlon and things like that, water weights, there are so many hurdles there. So athletes have to be so much trained up, and not just trained up, in between also they need pep-ups. So similarly, Prabhupada is saying this is like a race for a tapasvi, and one has to gain strength to deliver himself from the danger of being afflicted by the threefold miseries. In his Anuvritti explanation of the NOI verse, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, this is the first verse of the Nectar of Instruction. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a definition of a tapasvi and what is tapasya. One who resists the demands of urges is called tapasvi, or one who practices austerities. And such tapasya leads one or results in that one can overcome victimization by material energy, the external potency of the Lord. So one has voluntarily become a victim of the external energy. And when one does takes up tapasya or austerities, and what are these austerities? One says no to the urges of the mind, the urges of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and the genitals. So, subtle and gross, both one has to control. Then, in one very nice incident, like Prabhupada gives something very practical. Sometimes devotees may want to know, this is all right, but we are in a situation where things may not be so easy. You know, for the people in the renounced order, it's okay, but for others, what? So Prabhupada says, he is commenting on the verse in the Gita, that for one who is not austere, this confidential knowledge is not really revealed. Not austere, not devoted, then one who does not practice devotional service in the human form of life, like that. And one who is not envious. For these people, these four categories, the confidential knowledge is not given. In the 18th chapter, Krishna is saying that. So Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, the first part he begins with, how those who do not practice tapasya, confidential knowledge is not revealed. And in that point, Prabhupada, in that lecture, Prabhupada, he brings about this practical point. He says, now for someone who is a Brahmin, he may say that, all right, this killing is not very good business. And he may say, I will refrain from it. But for someone like Arjuna, who is a Kshatriya, and who has taken an oath of administration and protection, for him to say that I will refrain from killing, that is not tapasya, that is austerity, that is sense gratification. And therefore he says, for Arjuna the tapasya is that he has to fight, because that is his guna and karma. So, to conclude, the main definition appears to be that in the human form of life, one must purify one's existence, and purification of existence is possible only by tapasya. However, the other definitions are also there, which we can always note. Then Prabhupada, again, he brings out the point of, because in one of the verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Suhirudava tapasvinam. The translation is, the Supreme Lord, actually, those who are compassionate, they are merciful towards the materialists. And if the materialists are antagonistic to them, they do not take that personally. So the word used is tapasvina. And this word has been translated as materialists. So Prabhupada in the purport says, here the materialists can also be considered to be tapasvi. Why? Because they are engaged in so much austerities to try to enjoy sense gratification. So, this is also one way that one can look at. One cannot go on ridiculing the people who are outside struggling in their life always. Because one should understand, they are also doing so much of austerity. But this austerity is not properly directed. Therefore, devotee never ridicules generally. He does not go on just thrashing them. If you see Prabhupada's lectures, he may be, you know, always, it may be sometimes felt that he is a little hard on materialism. But always, generally, he'll offer a solution to that.
And the solution is so nice that the initial bashing is forgotten. So that's a devotee. A devotee does not just point out the defects, does not just criticize, does not just ridicule, because that is not his nature. His nature is to be compassionate. So he understands they are tapasvis. They are also engaged in austerity. However, their austerity is misdirected. And it is my tapasya to see that somehow or the other it can be directed or oriented properly. In this way, a devotee becomes compassionate. And Prabhupada quotes Narottam Das Thakur's poetry, Sangsara Bishanale Divanishi Hiyajwale. Just see how everyone is suffering. Divanishi, night and day. And this suffering, and they are trying to fight against it. Everyone is trying to fight against this suffering born from the material pangs. They want happiness. But it is being thwarted and they are dissatisfied. So, the conclusion Prabhupada says, therefore, a real tapasvi engages this misdirected tapasvis to gain the proper benefit of tapasya. And he says, therefore, we have introduced the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and taking prasad and seeing such wonderful form of deities. Because then they feel so much cooling effect from the burning fire of material existence. They feel so much pacified. Then Prabhupada gives in one of his writings, he sounds a warning. He says, sometimes devotees or those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, they may see that the materialists are doing so much tapasya and they may become influenced by them. What if I take up his process and also practice Krishna consciousness? So Prabhupada says, sometimes a mundane worker is misunderstood to be a tapasvi or a Mahatma because of the many austerities he performs to attain his mundane goals. So sometimes he may become attracted by what is going on outside by means of so many other... Unless until someone has some concept of absolute truth, then such conferences or such meetings are... they may be considered. But there are so many others which are there for mind concentration, for how to be a better speaker, how to influence people. And we may become enamored. What if I go there and get those, because they are the acharyas for that. So from them I can get that and use it in our Krishna consciousness. So this is for especially those who are just... you know, they are beginning or they are on the process of Krishna consciousness. We have to be careful not to be influenced by such mundane workers, not to be influenced by the tapasya that they do, by what they are performing. Because after all, such mundanas are only aimed at sense gratification. Hiranyakashipu is a very good example of how one should do tapasya, but not to be followed. Such wonderful, he gives that example to all his relatives. Almost like the science of Bhagavad Gita has been spoken. But we don't consider these instructions as our life and soul. We do not repeat Sri Hiranyakashipu watch and consider it. We do not see that Hiranyakashipu gave up material pleasure for a higher goal. And then when Brahma came, he had tears in his eyes and he was worshipping Brahma. He had affection for Lord Brahma. So maybe if you do that, maybe we should also go to Mandara Mountain 10,000 years. And then when we are... Brahmaji appears, then we can pray, Lord Brahma, please let me chant Hare Krishna nicely. One can maybe be influenced by such superhuman efforts. But we have to understand that they are all mundaners. Why? Because their process is aimed simply at sense gratification. So that is a warning. So this is the second part. The first part was the definition. The second part was some of... a materialistic tapasvi and how we should identify them. The third part is Prabhupada makes this comment very interesting and he says the genuine quality of a tapasvi is, actually this is what he says, that the beauty of a tapasvi or a saintly person is forgiveness. And this is such a wonderful point, because generally tapasya is associated with something very rigorous, isn't it?
And forgiveness is associated with something that is very marmic, something that is very soft. How do you relate the two? So Prabhupada here, he makes that comment. In the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, 4648. Please read it. We don't have... My time is over, so I'll just give the reference. Please read it. It's a very beautiful purport. And it begins with this point. It is said that the beauty of a tapasvi or a saintly person is forgiveness. And Prabhupada says there are so many examples of forgiveness. And in that purport he gives one example, and another place, two or three times, he quotes this. Chama rupa tapasvi naam. And I did try to find out what is the source of this quote. Please forgive me, at this point of time I don't have a source for this quote, except that Srila Prabhupada had quoted it at least four or five times in his entirety of giving lectures that is recorded. He has quoted it four or five times. Chama rupa tapasvi naam. The quality of a tapasvi is a kshama or forgiveness. And he gives two examples, and there are various other examples that we can take up. First example he says of Jesus Christ, because that is directly, you know, the quotation is there. My dear Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You see, in the life of Jesus Christ, small analysis, each of the parties was convinced that they were doing the best. Now, from our point of view, we may say this party was wrong. The Romans were wrong. The Jews were wrong. Everyone was wrong. But however, the entire board of the Jewish priests at that time, somehow or the other, they had no clue as to who a Messiah should be. Only that a Messiah would come and he would be born in humble, you know, in a humble surrounding. So they had their own idea of what is humility. Because we can say that maybe in parampara this was not properly explained, purports were not properly given of what humility would mean. So everyone was so confused that there was a small section which was feeling that maybe he may speak that he is the Messiah, and we know that actually he is not the Messiah, but then we should understand that he is not causing trouble to others. And there are those who are totally against him, that he is, if he says he is the Messiah, then he should be punished. The Romans, on the other hand, they had to do their administratorship, and they were convinced that this person is causing so much of problem in his community, therefore he has to be excommunicated. The Roman governor, he was very much attracted to Jesus, but then he was convinced that I have to somehow or the other really understand that this person is genuine or not, and the only way right now it seems is to crucify him. So each party was convinced that what they were following was the best path. And what did it lead to? The crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Just imagine. So, Jesus could have, at one point of time, he actually asked the Lord, let this cup pass from me. And then he said, oh no, my Lord, let your will be done, thine will be done, than mine. So, yeah, he was in a position to ask, why don't you understand, why don't you understand, why don't you understand? However, Prabhupada says, why Jesus Christ was able to do that? He said, because he was engaged in God's service. So simple. Sure, Prabhupada makes Krishna consciousness so simple. He does not give any mystical answer. You know, because he was a pure devotee, unalloyed. He gives it in such simple words. Because he was engaged in God's service. That's all. And what was God's service? What could it mean? It could mean that he was engaged in preaching. It could mean that he was trying to illuminate the people, their consciousness. It could also mean that God's service was that he had to be crucified. It could also mean that. And that may not be a palatable circumstance for many of us. So that is his quality. And in that quality, he not only endured that, not only tolerated it, but he says, forgive them, my Lord, for they know not what they do. And this is the beauty of a tapasvi. There he calls him a tapasvi. This is a tapasvi. He is undergoing so much austerities and still he is ready to forgive. Because he was engaged in God's service. Krishna has forgiven him in so many ways. Krishna has been merciful to him in so many ways. So he asks forgiveness for them also. Because he understands, each one of them is trying to do their best according to their misconception, that's all.
The second example he gives is of Parikshit Maharaj. He says, when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed, he was full in material and spiritual power. Parikshit Maharaj had material power wherein he could fight Taksha. And he had spiritual power where he could counteract the curse by which Takshak would come. He had material power. Parikshit was not an ordinary person. Materially he was... Material power does not mean that he could force the Brahmana and say, all right, revoke the curse. That is also possible. He had that material power. Because he was a king. But he had the material power also to counteract Takshak. That much he had. Vishnu Rat, he was protected by the Supreme Lord Sudarshan himself. Chakra himself. And spiritually, he could release himself from the curse. However, 3 points made him not do so. First, out of compassion. He was compassionate. What was his compassion? His compassion was towards all the living entities. His compassion was towards Sringi. His compassion was towards his father. Towards all of them. His forgiving nature. The second point that he had was out of respect for the Brahmana community. They have said it. If I counteract it in the future, there may be so many so-called kings who will try to, you know, just use that as an example. So they may not respect the Brahmanas. They may not respect the spiritual preceptors. So therefore, I should accept out of respect. And the third point that Prabhupada says why he accepted it was because he understood that it was a desire of Krishna that the Srimad Bhagavatam stood manifest. And thus, he forgave Sringi and accepted. And hence, if a devotee in a certain circumstance appears to be suffering, one should not consider that he is incapable of protecting himself. But one should understand that he is simply accepting it as Krishna's desire. And that is a tapasvi. So here we'll stop to cover this topic of tapasya, its definition. To purify human existence by following the process of dharma, tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam. We have to link it to Krishna. It has to be according to Krishna's desire to achieve Krishna's service. A material tapasvi may also be very powerful, but we should be very careful not to be influenced by that. And finally, the gem quality of a tapasvi is forgiveness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Gaur Premanande.